Well, there is a question that always jumps out at me about today's gospel reading from Matthew about the calling of the disciples. And that question is, how is it that Jesus simply says, "Follow me," and the disciples immediately leave behind their profession of fishing and leave behind their families in order to follow Jesus? Now, there are a lot of other parts of today's reading that we could focus on, including the arrest of John the Baptist or Matthew connecting the move of Jesus to Capernaum with the prophetic text from Isaiah about the people who sat in darkness seeing a great light. But for me, this mysterious call and response of the disciples is what jumps out at me. Now, of course, we could bring in other passages from other Gospels about the calling of the disciples, including the text from last week where John the Baptist points to Jesus and says, "Here is the Lamb of God." But if all we had was this text from Matthew, we are left with the impression that Jesus simply calls the disciples and they immediately leave everything behind to follow him. Last week, Marta preached on John's version of the call of disciples, and during her sermon, she mentioned a Presbyterian minister that we both really like a lot named Roger Nishioka. And she mentioned that Reverend Nishioka has focused a lot of his ministry on youth ministry and youth education, and we've both heard him in person speak at an education conference. And one of the stories that I thought of with this passage that Roger Nishioka tells is of a time when he was growing up as a child with a Presbyterian minister as a father. And he said that one of the rules that they always had in their house was that there would be no television when they ate dinner as a family. But they broke that rule every Sunday night because his dad wanted to watch Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. I can tell by your reaction that many of you have probably remember watching that show, and I sure remember watching that show with my family when I was a kid. I always remember Marlon Perkins narrating some scene while Jim Fowler was off wrestling an alligator or something like that. But I remember, as Roger Nishioka did, my whole family sitting around the TV and watching this amazing footage from all over the world. And one episode that Roger Nishioka still talks about is the one about the elephant seals in Argentina. And it followed a single mother seal and her baby, and how after the baby was born, the mother had to leave the baby so she could go and regain her strength by feeding off of the coast. And after this, the mother would come back to the area she had left, and she would call out to her baby. But of course, all the other mothers and babies were calling out to find each other, and so there was this huge noise, but the mother and baby were still able to find each other. And the narrator in the episode explained that from the moment the baby was born, the sound of the mother's and the baby's voices were imprinted on their memories, and that's what helped them find each other. And the thing that stood out to me from the story was when Roger Nishioka's Presbyterian minister father told him, this is what stuck out to me, he said, "That is how it is with God. We are imprinted with a memory of God, and God is imprinted with a memory of us. And even if it takes a lifetime, we will find each other." In the Gospel of Matthew's calling of the disciples, we are struck with the way that the disciples just immediately leave behind everything and follow Jesus. And when I think of them leaving their financial livelihood and all their family connections, it just seems so powerful and so mysterious to me that I suspect that Nishioka's father was right. I just suspect that there's something deep inside of us that's imprinted with God and imprinted on our souls from birth. We remember the words from Augustine in his book Confessions when he tells us that our hearts are restless until they find their rest in God. And I know I've mentioned this before to you, that I did not grow up as a Christian but became one around the age of 30. And I remember that time, just this feeling of something deep inside of me that resonated with this feeling that the story was true, that Jesus was God and that Jesus had a claim on my soul. Now, in thinking about this, all of this leads to another question, and a very important one, but one I'm not sure I quite have an answer to. And that question is that if all this is true, if we're indeed born into this world and in this life with an imprinting of God on our souls, then why don't more people respond to this imprinting? What keeps so many of us from responding to God's call in our lives? I've mentioned before several times that one of the things that gets in the way is just the sheer complexity and busyness of modern life. Things are just so busy and complicated and challenging in this modern life that a life of faith and devotion and responding to the call can just get choked away. It reminds me of that parable that Jesus tells about the weeds choking out the growing seed. I've also talked about something before that we've all noticed, is that church attendance and membership, while they're not synonymous with faith, that there is a general decline in religious observance, and it's across denominations and throughout Northern America in the 21st century, and it's especially pronounced in a place like the Pacific Northwest. Overall, the mood and the reality is one of decline rather than of renewal. And as I was thinking about this, on top of all this, we observant Christians have to be careful of pride and vanity, and we need to guard against saying something like, well, I'm sure glad I've responded to the call while all those other hopeless people have not. I think most of you, probably all of you, you're like me. You have family and friends and loved ones who don't seem to hear the sound of Jesus' voice, and I'm left more with a feeling of sadness than of pride. Another reason not to be prideful is that it's been my observation that even among those who do hear Jesus' voice and respond to God's call, often continue to have a hard time hearing it even within the walls of the church. I mean, we just see in story after story the endless church squabbling and fighting and overall bad behavior within churches. It's an indication that even when Christians are in the church, we have a hard time hearing the voice of Jesus. I don't know about you, but I personally know a lot of people who would say they're Christians, but it seems from my perspective that it often makes very little difference in their lives. I try very hard not to judge others, and it's not my place to decide who is and who's not following the voice, but I can just tell that it's a lifelong struggle for all of us to keep hearing that voice of Jesus. And so that brings up the whole subject and the theme of discernment. Even after we hear the voice and the call of Jesus upon our lives, throughout our Christian journey and throughout our lives, we need to keep listening to and discern what Jesus is trying to say to us today. The journey with Christ is one that is never complete, but it's this ongoing process of listening to and responding to Jesus. If you were here last week, you heard Marta mention during her sermon the phrase, WWJD, or what would Jesus do? And you've probably heard that before. She talked about a lot of aspects of that phrase, including the difficulty and the challenge it presents and how we're called to follow Jesus, but we cannot actually be Jesus. And so she mentioned that perhaps a better phrase would be WWJBD, or what would John the Baptist do? As in our primary role being to not to be Jesus, but to follow Jesus as John the Baptist did. I've heard another rewording of the phrase as WIJD, or what is Jesus doing? And what I like about that phrase and that turn of the phrase is that it asks us not to compare ourselves to Jesus, even though it's always a good question in any situation to ask what would Jesus do, but rather as a church and as parishioners, we can ask, what is it that Jesus is already up to here and now, and where is he wanting to take us? And when I ask that question, what is Jesus doing within the context of Westminster, I see a lot of life and energy and new ministries going on. If you were to ask the question, how can I follow and serve Jesus in this time and place, there's so many opportunities and possibilities that I feel like I need some kind of structure to put an order to it. And as I thought about that, one way to do that is to just go down the list of ministry areas as organized in our session, which, as you may know, is our governing body. And so I did that, and I thought about it. In the area of worship, this can seem obvious, but we're called to come to worship. And it's an obvious thing. But again, I want to encourage people, as I have in the past, not to see worship just as a way of filling up your own spiritual life, which it certainly does, but as an act of service, coming to worship as an act of service for others. When more people come to worship, it brings with it more life and energy and faithfulness. And when you come, please do actively sing and think and to pray and to do it with energy. If you're so inclined, join the choir or the bell choir or serve as a liturgist or offer to help with the children's moments or as an usher or a greeter. There are just so many ways that you can help. With Christian education, I see Jesus at work everywhere with a growing children's ministry and growing youth ministry and lots of offerings with adult education. We always need people to help with Sunday school or help with youth ministry. Or even if you don't teach or volunteer, take time to get to know all the kids' names or say hello to them when you're around the church. Also, and this has been true at every church I've been at, there's only a small fraction of parishioners that come to adult education, but those who do bring their gifts, and it's a way to serve both your growth and others, because it always just blesses everybody else when you come. So continuing on the list, with fellowship, please come and attend the many offerings that are here. Just in recent years, there have been new offerings with Westminster Women and new Presbyterian Women Circles, new fellowship events on Sundays. Westminster in the last few years has been blessed with a lot of new members just in the past few years. So take time to get to know someone new, because I think Jesus is very active in the growth of the church. With buildings and grounds, you can help care for the property through mowing or church work days. With stewardship, we depend so much on active pledged giving. And I see Jesus at work in a growing endowment. So please consider supporting the endowment and taking care of the future of the church. And with mission, I've said before that I tend to think of mission very broadly. It's almost just everything we do with the church, but I just see it everywhere in the ministry of Westminster. But there are so many ways to support mission, such as supporting with our food offerings every month, serving at the dining room, all the many creation care efforts, all the agencies we support in Eugene, the newer and growing relationship with the HIV Alliance, the Interfaith Shelter. I mean, we could just go on and on. And of course, separate from the session, there are so many activities that the deacons are involved with through caring ministries, their presence at memorial services, and so many Christmas season ministries and missions. The deacons really serve in every aspect of the church. And with our nominating season coming up, we're meeting for the first time today, I want to encourage everyone to actively consider serving as an officer, either on the session or on the deacons. Now, besides all of these active ways of serving in the church, I hear the voice of Jesus calling us just to work on our own lives. Some people can serve in many active ways, and some people can't, but all of us can work on and pay attention to the ways that we fall short in our personal lives, how we need to move ourselves away from anger and attack and blame and move our way towards compassion and forgiveness and mutual forbearance. All of us, as Katie mentioned, all of us can work to invite others to church. You can tell anyone, oh, I have a church, and this is why I go. There's just no end to the way that we can respond to Christ's voice in the world and help us to keep the church alive and vibrant, even when so many others are falling away or not listening to the voice of Jesus. As I was thinking about these things, I was reminded of a moment when I was thinking about graduate programs and the study of religion, and I was comparing seminary programs with some more secular programs of study, and I'll never forget an important advisor in my life said, well, at the secular programs, they study what it all meant, but at the seminaries, you study what it means. And that made all the difference to me, and I ended up going to seminary, and it reminds me that our faith is alive. It's not a thing of the past. The voice of Jesus is alive and calling out to us. For the rest of our lives, we need to discern and we need to listen. The voice of Jesus is calling us, so how will we respond?